Hey, welcome to Blue Jay Banner, sponsored by Equitable Bank. We take banking personally, West Pacific Dental Group, and Dr. Robert Hogan and Infusion Brewery. It's been a while since we've been able to drink a Let It Fly, but it's been a while since we won, so there's that. I got a feeling we'll be all drinking a celebratory drink after Wednesday, though. Welcome to the show, Tim Kruger, along with Ross Ferrarini and our producer, Zach Weaver. What's up, Ross?
I'm locked in here. We are officially tonight just a couple of hours away from having our first two teams in college basketball eliminated from national championship contention here.
Oh, who's playing? I don't even know.
We've got the play-in games for the Atlantic Sun are on right now, my friend. We've got Florida Gulf Coast playing Queens, and we've got Bellarmine playing North Florida.
You know, Queens actually has put up a pretty good fight against some teams this
year. Queens was really, really good at the Division II level.
Yeah. I like the is it the Northeast, I believe? The third place team is right now the team that would go to the NCAA tournament because the first two are ineligible. Like Merrimack and
Stonehill.
Stonehill, yeah. They're both leading the league. Isn't that crazy? St. Thomas, I listened to a lot of Minneapolis sports talk, and they were talking about the horrible basketball in Minneapolis right now. Timberwolves are doing well. Gophers are in last place. The Gopher women are damn near in last place. They're talking about, and somebody goes, hey, St. Thomas is like in third place in this summit.
St. Thomas is going to be really good in the summit in a few years. They're doing a brand new arena up there.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of money at that school. I think it's only a matter of time before St. Thomas gets really good. But we need to get rid of, I think you probably should agree with me on this, we need to get rid of the whole eligibility requirements for the teams that transition to Division One. It is so silly. It's ridiculous that these teams have to wait like 5 years to potentially gain any eligibility for the NCAA tournament. Who did we have last year? We had somebody last year that technically won. Was it Bellarmine?
Could have been. They were pretty good.
And they couldn't go. So the team that finished second in the conference tournament got the bid.
Yeah, I would like to talk to somebody way smarter than me, find out what their thought process is on waiting, you know, having that long period. And I do agree with you. I think there maybe should be some sort of period because you don't want teams just Division II just flying, jumping all over the place. So
5 years seems long, though.
You want to make them go through some hoops. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I feel bad for those schools that, like, you know, I would at least like them to be able to go to the NIT.
Right.
You know, if they're going to win their conference, they'd be able to go to the NIT.
I agree.
I saw an NIT list today, too. Somebody rattled out all the teams that are now eligible. That have won their regular season crown are eligible for the NIT. And, you know, it's a big deal because it knocks out – it's great because it knocks out a lot of, like, power schools that normally get in.
Right.
If they don't win their conference tournament, then they have to go to the NIT. And, I know Hofstra is a real candidate because Charleston is a power in that league. They just didn't win the league. They lost the tiebreaker.
Right.
So,
right.
Pretty interesting there.
I also just entered a conference tournament pool, second straight year. It was a ton of fun last year. A buddy of mine from the East Coast, his friend or acquaintance or somebody runs it. Very excited. Very excited. Locks you into all the conference tournaments.
I'm excited for you, Russ.
My favorite time of year.
I'm sorry that you won't be able to bet on Queens maybe after tonight. I feel bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold on. While this isn't fresh in my head, okay? Because you're with me, you watch a lot of those late night games, right?
Yep, tons.
I'm trying to think here. Was it Boise State, New Mexico? Yes. At Boise State.
Oh, yeah.
They were five and a half point favorites.
Oh, yeah. They're I watched the whole thing.
Up 10 with like 30 seconds left. Yep. A guard gets two free throws two times.
Martin Shaver.
All four. The ball bounces off the rim, Ross. And I just immediately thought of you. And I said, Ross Ferrarini, watch this dude drain a three right here. And sure enough, New Mexico covers.
Not just any guard that missed those free throws. One of the best guards in their league.
Yes, I know it.
And a guy that's been really, really good there, Marcus Shaver. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I mean, that
those
was
are the most that those are the most torturous, because if you watch a lot of basketball and gamble on basketball, you could see that one coming down the road. Like, you're like, wow, if they don't make a couple free throws here, they're gonna cover this, you know? You could
basketball is
just
college, particularly at the end of game, you never feel safe because college coaches are obsessed with prolonging the game as long as humanly possible. Like, they could be down 8 with 20 seconds left and they're still going to foul. And you don't get that in the NBA. NBA coaches just wave the white flag. So you don't have to grind out free throws and kind of crazy scenarios as near as much in the NBA if it's relatively closer. But yeah, gosh, I the amount of times in college this year I've seen scenario, maybe not quite as extreme as that one, but very similar scenarios. It happens nightly.
It's just frightening when you see it come, because you can see that train coming down the tracks.
Yep.
When we do get Ron on, Ron likes to always do a Q&A with us, you know, on Blue Jay Banners, on our BlueJayBanner.com. He likes us. We're going to let Ron tonight ask us the questions. Ross, so I want you to jump in a lot and ask. He'll ask us questions about the Creighton team.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Ron probably – I hope Ron understands that we're probably not going to ask a lot of questions about the Georgetown team. We're going to ask a lot of questions about who's the next coach.
Yeah.
Because rumors are flying.
That's probably more important at this current juncture for Georgetown basketball.
And it kind of looks Sunday like about the second half, those players said, yeah, we're kind of wondering who the next coach is. They kind of – after making a little run there, they just packed it in at the end.
I fell into the trap. I so stupid. I had a little teaser, like a five or
too.
Six
me
game
too.
Teaser.
I did it too. Did you see the line move? The line moved from 9.5 to 6.5 in that game.
Yeah, and I just said, you know, maybe you keep falling into the trap. I've done it a few times this year of looking at the roster and saying, God, there's some talented kids on this roster, and it doesn't matter. Just let it lie. Let a dead dog lie. Just be done.
Amazingly
with
enough, if you watch that game, Hopkins got 3 fouls in like the first 3 minutes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, they are in trouble here. And they went on a 17-1 run after he went to the bench.
Crazy.
Oh my word. Yeah. So speaking of absolutely disastrous debacles, what were your thoughts on the Creighton game Saturday?
You know, I didn't get to watch every single second of it. I had it on in my car in the first half. I was driving to Sioux Falls for my brother's Division II conference tournament. So I got to watch, you know, kind of here and there a little bit in the car, but and watched most of the second half. It just looks like they kind of ran into a freight train of a Nova team that looked really good, that kind of put it together. You know, now that they've had Justin Moore healthy for 4 or 5 games or 6 games or whatever it is now, they kind of put it together with a full healthy team for 40 minutes. And they just, you know, and Eric Dixon, you know, it helps when, you know, your big man, you know, buries, what did he bury, 6 threes?
6 of 8.
That certainly helps matters. So
yep.
This disappointing. I thought we would have had a little bit of a better effort after such a downer of a game on Tuesday night, but got to turn the page. No one feels sorry for us. It just, you got to turn the page, and we got to focus up here the last couple of weeks.
And people like to blame one thing, and it's never one thing. So, I mean, this game was like 4 things to me. One, we let one game turn into 2 losses, okay? Because it did appear that the team just wasn't – they seemed a half step slow all day long.
Yeah.
Number two, and this happened, and I said it on the radio this morning with Gary Sharp with my bracketology. And after I say this, I go like, God, I hope none of the coaches are listening, because they're very thin skinned. But Matt, I mean, we know this. We've talked about this. Mac does a phenomenal job of game planning. I mean, he probably wins 12 games a year just game plan, just strategy and so forth. Like, he's so good. He even admits it. Like, there's a couple games a year where he just goes, yeah, you know, we did this. We thought this was going to be the ticket. The guy just stepped up and beat us. That's all I can say. And you could tell Saturday that was the exact case. When he went to the handshake line with Dixon, Mac had a smile on his face, kind of pumped him in the chest like, you got me today. You know, yeah. And then Max said too that Cock kind of got caught in between once he started hitting some threes.
Yeah.
Cock was like, yeah. Okay, kind of halfway go out, halfway come back. Those are, and then the other thing, again, we shot really poorly, poorly from the field, and they shot great. So, that's just kind of how the game went. So,
yeah, probably pretty locked into the 4-5 game here with UConn. So it's going to be a battle.
Here he is. The whole city of, I'm not kidding you, Ron. People have come up to me and go, hey, when are you going to have that Ron dude on from Georgetown? We love him. We love him.
I love to hear it.
Look at that dog.
Oh, yeah, that's my little brother. That's my parents' dog. That's my little brother. He ain't little, though. He's a mastiff, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's a big dog.
Yeah.
What's up, Ron? How you been?
Pretty good, pretty good. Just maintaining, just trying to get through this nightmare of a season.
Yeah, I know. And I know we usually do a little thing over texting so far. Yeah. We're going to do a special thing tonight. We're going to let you ask the questions here in a little bit. So you can ask us. We got Ross here, and Ross is an expert ex-player, and he'll be able to answer all the questions for you.
Oh, okay. That'll work.
Yeah, all right. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to talk a lot about your team because the whole news all over the country is who's the next coach?
Yeah.
Who's the next coach,
Ron? That's what it is. I mean, the people on the staff, some members on the staff and in the program believe that the change is going to happen. It kind of has to. I mean, you consider they've gone 2-37 over the last 2 years in Big East play. You know, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
2-37 over 2 years. That's, and probably 2-38 when they have to, they lose, they probably lose the Creighton. And then 2-39 when they lose in the first round of the Big East tournament. So yeah, it has to happen. Now, Georgetown is a organization not used to bringing in new people. Okay. If you look at all the lineage of the basketball coaches, they all were somehow related to Big John Thompson. From Big John on. Yep. All of them. Big John, Esrich,
yep.
JT3, Ewing. All right. So we're talking about since 72. All right.
50 years.
Yeah. Exactly. They don't have a lot of experience bringing in these coaches, new coaches into the fold. Number two, they don't like bringing people in like that. It's a very closed cultural environment. That's the legacy of Big John, right? So, but now the organization is kind of like at a little a point, a turning point, a splitting point, right? So they can either kind of hold on to this culture, which is relatively toxic internally. You can do that and struggle, or you can wipe it clean. And so the question now is, how do they, if they are going to wipe it clean?
Right. Does the athletic director, is the athletic director now, are they in favor of making a big cultural change?
That's a great question. They're very silent. Lee Reed, great guy. But the way it's set up, he doesn't really, well, you know what? I can't answer that question. The way it's set up, he really doesn't have direct authority over the basketball program. They're almost kind of like co-equals, right? I've heard from various sources that he wants to change that relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, and surprise, and not unsurprisingly, that kind of setup was what helped bring about Ewing's demise.
Right.
I mean, he was relatively inexperienced. He was very inexperienced as a college head coach. As a college coach, period. So when you bring somebody in and then imbue them with that kind of power, that kind of no one can really get at him but maybe the president, when you do that kind of thing, you're setting him up for failure. Because he needed a stronger guiding a culture that can guide him a little bit, in my opinion, until he learned what he needed to do. And that just wasn't there. So, yeah, that culture, it has to go, and it was one of the things that really, in my estimation, brought down Patrick Ewing.
We're hearing Mike Bray. I've heard that rumor.
I've heard that rumor too.
Samantha guy, familiar with the area, obviously tons of experience, doesn't want to quit coaching yet.
I've been hearing that too. It's curious. Historically, there's been no love between Mike Bray and Georgetown. There's been no love, very little love between DeMaster and Georgetown, historically. So, if you know, going forward, they might try to break away from that. They might consider him. But to be quite honest, I think they, I mean, you hear names like Cooley. But it, but sources tell me
Cooley ain't leaving problems. I mean, they say that Cooley's not leaving problems.
He
ain't leaving problems.
He should.
He never
leaving
problems.
It would take an exorbitant amount of money to get him.
Oh, I don't think he wants to.
That would be stupid, right? No. That would make no sense. Yeah, so you hear names like that, Pitino, which to me is also, which is really unsavory to a certain degree.
Right.
And the cat, you know, he hated the Thompsons. I mean, there was no love lost between those groups. They were dire competitors, right? And so, I mean, he could just be using them as coaches did the last time around. They used Georgetown to kind of, like, get more money. Mac did it. The guy out there at USC, I can't remember his name, that was at Gulf Coast, he did it.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what that could very well be. But there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of confusion. And, we'll see how it plays out. I really don't think that it's going to be a quick hire. I think they're going to go after guys that might be using them. They're not going to get. I think they'll have to go down just in terms of stature for some guy to get a guy. I think they'll get it before they did. Last time they didn't hire a coach until May. It was AAU time when they hired you. It'll be before then, but I don't think it's going to be the same.
Interesting. We're talking with Ron Bailey, Hoyer Report. My brother at the Rivals Network over there. Like Ross was saying, we were just talking before he came on. Ross is like, man, Saturday, he goes, I thought, I fell into the trap. I thought that 7 points, I go, Providence might not be up. And every time I look at that Georgetown roster, there's some doubt there. I mean, I think when Sparks gets it going, my God, he looks great.
Right.
He looks unstoppable at times.
Yeah, they are. Well, one thing that really hampered him against Providence was, Cutis Wahab told them that he wasn't going to be able to go while he was on the bus to the game.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're dealing with arguably the most physical team in the Big East, one of the more bigoted physical teams in America, without your starting senior pivot, right? So you bring in two sophomores to go against Causewell, who destroyed them on the boards and scoring. You bring in Brad Isawero, very raw, athletic, bouncy, very, he's a developmental player, and his footwork is terrible. And then you have Ryan Matambo, who has more DNPs this year probably than minutes played. All right, so they weren't going to win that game when Wahab told them, I can't. And it was on senior night too, senior day too.
So. Yeah, I thought when Hopkins got three fouls in the first 3 minutes, I went, okay.
You got a chance.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Ron, we're gonna let you ask away. What do you want to ask us about Creighton?
Who beside 55, who can really be relied on for frequency?
Roscoe?
Trey Alexander. He's even a better 3-point shooter than 55, Shireman.
Oh, okay. Because he doesn't start, though, right?
Trey? Oh, yeah.
No, Trey. Yeah, Trey's probably our most talented scorer.
Okay. Well, I thought is the best player or the most important player on that team, is it the center? Because I asked this because he provides so much gravity at the rim with his hard dives, his constant rim running, and it seems like that sets y'all's offense up on that extreme spread setup.
Yeah, when he's healthy and effective, the team is awful, awful good. When he's either in foul trouble or having a tough game or hurt, the team tends to struggle a little bit. So he's certainly, you're dead on there that he's certainly the most important player to the team.
Yeah, and I'll say this, Ron. I'll say the last two games, both much more Marquette than Villanova. Marquette just took him away. They fronted him all over the court, and they were not going to let him get the ball. They were not going to let him run to the rim. Villanova didn't do it as much, but they still had – they came with a lot of doubles. So anytime he got it down low, I think overall he can do a better job making himself available, and I think the team can do a better job of getting the ball inside. Yeah.
How do you guys feel if you can somehow stop the quick pace? somehow stop the early offense and force a rock fight with Creighton. Is that a game that the Blue Jays can win? A rock fight, or do they need it, the open flow? They need a lot of shots. They need the quick pace. Can they win? Can they prevail against a good team in a rock fight?
I would say the first 8 or so years of Mac's tenure, the answer would be no. I would say the past few years, that answer has changed. They're much better defensively, and they're a lot tougher on that end of the floor the past few years, and their defensive numbers bear that out. So I do think that if push came to shove and they had to get into that type of game, I think that they can pull those types of games out.
I'll give you an example, Ron. The UConn game in Omaha against Creighton. There wasn't a bigger rock fight game in the Big East all year long. I mean, two very talented teams. It was just a grind out, and Creighton won the game. I mean, it was just
okay.
Nobody got to 60 points. You know,
he's not from what I see. He's not pack lining as intently as he used to. Is that fair? Defensively, I mean, they still gap. But before, that was like a real pack line defense, and now it's kind of like a hybrid. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, he used to do a lot of pack line stuff when he was at Northern Iowa and Iowa State. He hasn't been near
at
as
Creighton
much like
too,
that.
Yeah, Creighton was, too, though.
Maybe the first few years, they're a little bit more aggressive now. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, when they bring in Sharif Mitchell off the bench, I mean, he'll guard guys 94 feet. He'll get in guys just from the jump. I mean, they've changed their philosophy there a little bit.
Okay, they still gap a lot though, right? They put people in the gaps as opposed to just hugging man.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on personnel too. Okay. It depends on if you know some of these guys are guarding knockdown shooters, or it varies if you're guarding a Jordan Hawkins or you're guarding, a Jared Bynum or a Bryce Hopkins or a Tyler Kolek. I mean, it just kind of depends on what type of player they're going against. Mac is very scout oriented, game by game.
Last question: How far can the Jays go, conceivably, realistically? Not conceivably, realistic.
You want an answer like a week ago or now?
Now.
They could, if they end up as a 5 or 6 seed in the tournament, they could lose the first round game, depending on who they play. This is almost a cop-out answer, or depending on how their draw is, I could see them literally getting to the Final Four.
I think
there is a lot of variance with this team, depending on who they play and how they're shooting the basketball and how everything kind of comes together. March is going to be pretty fascinating.
Okay. That's it. Thank you. You guys helped me out a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're just going to let you know Wednesday night, I can't remember a Creighton game in a long time where there's not a lot of anticipation after coming off 2 straight losses, losing that chance to win the conference. They're basically locked into the 4 or 5 game with UConn in the Big East tournament. They really, you know, other than the NCAA seeding and, you know, keeping that going, they don't have a lot to play for right now. But to me, I think it's a big game because they got to get right, man. They've got to get some things figured out.
And Georgetown this year has been, you know, the recipe, the antidote for that, for people that need to get it right.
Well, but I'll tell you what, they've been very competitive.
Oh, they have.
They've been very competitive in most of their games. They've been right there with teams.
What happens is that typically they're competitive and then they're not, right? Sometimes that not happens in the first half. Sometimes, like against Providence, and other times it happens in the second half. But it's always around 5 minutes left to play in the half, maybe 6 minutes left to play in the half. You're playing a lot of guys, a lot of minutes. I think fatigue does play a role, because they don't play slow. They probably should, but they don't. And it's just at that point, you can almost feel it. It's happening. You can feel it.
One last question I want to ask you a little bit about the Big East. So you watch, I mean, Ross and I are just so impressed with Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
The job they've done this year.
Yeah, I like him. He's got a balanced team. He's got multiple guys that can help, and they seem to complement each other. They did a very good job putting together that team at such a short notice. You know, he lost, 8 guys or something? Yeah. And so he has 8 new guys. That being said, the development of Kolick has probably been the number one reason why they're as good right. as they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be MVP of the league, I think.
And, clearly. And he reminds me of a Nash, a bigger version, slower version of maybe Nash, in the way he just dribbles around defenders, dribbles around screens, and just finds people. And that's just – and it's not a play – like, when you can tell when he goes around somebody, his head is up. There's not a real understanding that player A is going to be here. It's a, player A is open now, let me find him. Or let me he's scanning the entire floor. He doesn't get locked in. He's aggressive. He's pretty big. And he's not afraid. He's a very competitive player. He could very well be the Big East player of the year.
Ron, I want to thank you so much. By the way, I'm going to be coming to Georgetown here in the next year or two because my wife wants to see that damn bulldog in the car so bad.
All right. No problem. we'll hang out. We'll hang out.
We'll touch base, buddy. All right, okay, Ron. Thank you. You are an American hero. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
That's Ron Bailey, Hoya Report for the Rivals Network there in Georgetown. That was a good touch base of Ron. I told you, Ross, first question. Hey, 55.
Yeah. I don't think other team, the names of players on other teams aren't on the top of his priority list.
The time he did number 10 and Matt goes, his name is Maurice Watson.
That's hysterical.
All right. So we were right before Ron came on. So we just finished up. Yeah. You know, the letdown, I think there was a letdown there that we shot the ball poorly. They shot the ball great. And just, you know, some things we came in game planning against them just didn't pan out, you know. One guy, though, that I had, I wonder what your thoughts are. And again, he drew an over. Caleb Daniels, man, he's struggling for them. Holy cow. Yeah, he's been struggling all year, but he really
He's one guy, you know, you're right. He's one guy I would have figured would have had a much better year this year than he's had. And, you know, again, we've said this before about this Villanova team. You know, maybe he is really a guy that benefited tremendously from having a Colin Gillespie around. Because, you know, it's become in vogue, it feels like, over the past week or so for everybody to kind of say, oh my gosh, this Nova team, everybody kind of look out. This team could go on a run. And you know, they could. But I still think they really just miss a traditional point guard.
Armstrong's playing pretty good. He played good Saturday. You know, if he comes off the bench. But
Yeah. But, I mean, they do have – I mean, gosh, so you do look at their pieces now. If they're healthy, I mean, I can absolutely see a world where they make the Big East title game. Can't you?
I can. And there's a little tiny piece of me that says I could see them show up. Hearing all this, they're hearing it, right? They're hearing the noise now for about 2 weeks, right? Oh, my God. You guys, Fox, you know, who's going to be the surprise of the Eastern Me? Everybody's saying Villanova. That's all they're hearing, the noise. Now they're a veteran team, and they've been through this, so I get that. There's a small piece of me that think that they could go out there, Madison Square Garden, first game on Wednesday, maybe the crowd's not into it, and Georgetown just goes out there and goes, we're just going to let it fly and whatever happens, and just – you know what I mean? Like, there's that small piece of me that thinks that could happen.
Yeah, I think it could happen for sure.
You know, I don't think they're invincible by any means, you know?
Yeah, so, right.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I was getting a question about this from – because I said the same thing about Villanova. Because, you know, Villanova and Nebraska have, I think, the exact same record, 15-14. So a couple of my Nebraska basketball buddies have said, hey, if we win out, if we do this, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the committee has only given an at-large to one 15-loss team ever. Is that right?
Well, yeah, kind of about, you know, the with these MTEs, teams have played a lot more games, so it's kind of gotten all skewed up. There was a 16-14 team that made it one time. Georgia had made it. There's been several 17-14 teams. Vanderbilt made it. I believe they were 19-15, I want to say. Here's the difference. Here's the difference. The Vanderbilt team had the number one strength of schedule in the country. They only had two quad one wins. They had a whole bunch of losses. Got very similar to a if you look at West Virginia and Oklahoma State's resumes, kind of the same thing. They got just a ton of Q1 losses.
I'll tell you this too about Nebraska. Nebraska's way further down on KenPom than I thought. They're 93rd. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and their net's way down. And yeah, they don't have the metrics. Computers aren't really in love with them. They actually lost ground beating Minnesota the other night by 6-7 spots in the net. So yeah, there's no chance. They just need to keep winning to get an NIT. And I think the NIT would love them because they know they're gonna fill the arena. I mean they weren't expecting this. This is all gravy to them. So this is, and they're an exciting team to watch. So yeah, I think they're definitely going to be a fun team to watch in the NIT if they can keep
winning. I do wonder if there's a world where UConn goes 2-0 this week, which would mean they would beat UConn, and they make the title game. Let's say it's against us or UConn or Marquette or whoever it is in the Big East title game, and they end up losing. I am curious if the committee would say, but I don't know. They're 62nd.
I'm sorry. Who does Villanova have this week?
They play Seton Hall on the road tomorrow, and then they play UConn at home Saturday.
Okay, so that's a tough haul. I don't think they can't. There's no way. I think UConn's almost locked into, right? I think there's no way Villanova can pass them, right?
No, you're right. I think Villanova would have to play four games UConn in 4 days.
I think Creighton, Villanova, and UConn are pretty much locked into their spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Villanova is going to be in that sixth seed. So they'd be coming from that other side of the bracket. So if they play us or UConn or Marquette in the Big East title game and they've won up until then, so they'd be five more in a row from here. So then they could go into that game 20-14. I'm curious if they did lose that game, if at 20-15, they've got, as it currently stands, the 26th ranked strength of schedule. If the committee said they've got Justin Moore back, look what they've done the past month. I don't know. It's just a hypothetical.
No. Great question. And perfect segue to what I was going to mention a couple times here. Our mock selection committee kicks off this Thursday night, 6:00 Central. Go to our YouTube channel, Mock Selection Committee. It's sponsored by Godfather's Pizza. We've got 6 committee members this year. We've got special guests coming in throughout the whole weekend. We've got a session 6 on Thursday, 6 on Friday. If you're wondering about Creighton, probably mid to late evening on Friday, that's when you want to tune in, because that's probably when we'll get around to the seating of Creighton, maybe even Saturday morning. And but I got to tell you, we're a little bit handicapped, but we're going to be doing it a week out. So we probably, when we're finished this coming Sunday, we probably wouldn't consider Nova because we wouldn't have their full body of work yet. You know what I mean? Now, if they lost, if they lose 2 this week, of course, it's a moot point, right? But we go as a mock selection, and just let everyone know, we do go back. We get together for like a half hour one day and kind of fix up our bracket that we originally did and go, okay, this team lost 2. Let's move them up 1, whatever. We fix it all up for the final bracket. But anyway, join us. It's going to be a blast. We've got a lot of people following us now. We've just got hundreds of followers, gained 100 followers here over the last couple months. So it's going to be a great time. We're going to produce it great. And it's sponsored by Godfather's Pizza. So make sure and join us on that. And I'm sure, Ross, even though we won't have that full body of work, I'm sure they're going to come up. I'm sure that discussion with Villanova will come up at some point in our meetings, because that's a great point. I mean, the committee has never given a team a huge bump because they missed somebody.
Yeah, I don't.
So they have looked at it and, certain situations. This obviously is probably one of the more intriguing situations I can remember where you have a guy.
The more I look at it, the more I look at the schedule, I don't see it happening. Their two best wins have been the back-to-back games they've just played. So Xavier on the road and then Creighton at home. The next best win that they have was Saturday in December against a bottom of the barrel Big 12 team in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I haven't even looked deep dive in their thing because they've been so
far. That's their next best win, so I just don't. With that resume, I don't see it happening.
Right. Yeah.
But who knows? There seems to be every year. There seems to be at the very least one team that gets in where everybody kind of scratches their head.
Yep. Last year was kind of actually A&M not getting in. Everybody scratched their head. Everybody had A&M in. You know. Some people had put in Notre Dame over them. Some people didn't have Notre Dame in over them. Notre Dame got in. There always is. There's always one, you know, you don't, and it's like, I know even Joe Lenardi gets on the committee a lot. And even in private conversations with me, he gets on the committee a lot. But I mean, you don't know if you're not in that room, you don't know the conversation that came up. You know, they've got these monitors. They monitor these leagues, and they, you know, there could be some information that we don't think about or aren't privy to that they're like, look,
right?
Joe Blow was hurt for three games. Like, he's their sixth guy, and that really affects them. Look at their record when he did play. You know, you don't know. So I don't never too awfully hard. I, you know, time and time again, we get, and that's what somebody on Twitter shot at me when I put out my bracket this morning was like, oh, well, I think you should have moved this team up because they did good this weekend and this team didn't do good. I'm like, dude, you got to look over 30 games. It's not – we get that recency bias with the conference tournaments. We go, ooh, right. They're on the bubble and they won too, so they've got to be in. No, it doesn't work.
I remember I was beating the drum last year, and it turns out they almost won their first-round tournament, their first-round game against Murray State, but – I thought San Francisco being like a virtually a lock to get in by everybody. I thought that was completely insane. When you go back and look at the resume last year, but they did end up getting in and they almost won a game. But like I said, there always are a couple where it seemingly doesn't make as much sense, but yeah, maybe the committee looks at other stuff that we're not as privy to.
There's a team this year. It's sitting out there that on my bracket, they just never, every time I look at them, they just don't have enough. That's Utah State. You know, they just they haven't beaten the top teams in that league like some of the other ones have, you know, on a consistent basis. So that's another one that, you know, but who knows? As we said, we're sponsored by Equitable Bank. We take banking personally. Make them your bank of choice. They're the bank of Blue Jay Banner. Doug Nodgaard, president, big Jays fan. Also, West Pacific Dental Group and Dr. Robert Hogan. He's my dentist. Make them yours as well. And then Infusion Brewery. Make sure and check out all of their great products. A great place to go is down their tasting room and Papillion. You can also go over to Crescent Moon and taste all their great products. So make sure you check that out. Ross, I want to, before we get wrap it up with some biggie stuff, baseball team. So they go into Coastal Carolina. Pretty good program, right?
Mm-hmm.
They lose an absolute shootout the first day, 14-11. They get clobbered the second day, and then they come back and win big time yesterday, 10-5. So nice job. I was very happy with the Jays getting one out of that trip. They got two for McNeese State the weekend before, a team's picked to win their conference title. And hats off to them Wednesday night or Tuesday night. They look great, didn't they? They're all dressed in white shirts. You know, that's
a good thing. Right. They came
white
out
shirts, pants. They've all looked nice out there.
Three of the t-shirts.
Having a set with Nolan Saylor's parents were sitting next to me. So that was a lot of fun talking to them some baseball. So congratulations. Jays go on the road again this weekend. Okay. So I just wanted like wild speculation. I don't care about breaking down numbers. I just names off the top of my head. So let's just start. Don't they pick six players for the first team? It's kind of goofy. They pick an MVP and then they pick five other guys, which I never
understood. That sounds right.
Yeah. So let's just kind of go throw some names out there. I think, you know, and I want to go back on something we had the conversation with Casey a couple shows ago, a post-game show ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, he's the best player in the league. And he goes, well, I don't know if he's the best player in the league. I think he's the best player in the league because he has the ball in his hands all the time. Now, obviously, you've got two other guys who are NBA guys, Hopkins and Hawkins. Those are clear-cut first-teamers. No mention.
Wait, say it again, Hopkins and who?
Hopkins and Hawkins.
Oh, Jordan Hawkins, yeah.
Yes. Not even close. Not even a – there's not even a debate there. So you throw Kolek in there. We all think Kolek, because they won the league, he's going to be
in. Oh, my God, absolutely. Kolek, absolutely. Yeah. Kolek is probably going to win Biggie's Player of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, that's what I mean. He's going to win Biggie's Player of the Year. Okay, so that's three. So we've got three more.
I agree with you on those three. I think they – I mean
– now, who do you go with? Like, so – Xavier? See, I would just been all Boom will probably get it. Boom will probably get it. I don't know.
Boom, 100%. Yeah. Yep.
I feel bad because I think Fremantle might have been the guy had he not got hurt.
Thule Boom will 100% get it. I think.
Well, that's four.
You could have made an argument for Nunji maybe even, but I don't think he's gonna end up being on it.
Yeah, I think the fifth guy, because. Just because typically this is the way they do it. They put
Finogo. Another guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's going to get it. But then the other guy, I think because they won the conference, I think Cam Jones will get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
So I think that's your six. I don't think there's a whole lot of debate there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would
that.
Say Defensive Player of the Year, though, I would go with why can't I remember his name? The kid from Providence.
Devin Carter?
Yes. Yes. Ed's
who,
been
by the way, I didn't know his dad was Anthony Carter, who played NBA for him.
Played in Hawaii. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's second team in my book.
I actually really like Providence's team. I almost like them more than I liked their team last year, to be honest. I think they could cause some serious issues for a lot of teams in the Big Dance.
I would put Klingon on the all freshman team.
Yep.
I would put second team. I would put Carter on second team. I think Kalk probably has to be on second team. I think probably Baylor Schreierman second team.
See, I would say they would take maybe Nembhard over Baylor.
Yeah, they tend to really like point guards.
Or even Trey over Baylor.
As we go down the list, I don't think there's really anybody from Villanova, you know, long term. You can't say, you know, you obviously can't take
Dixon.
More.
I think Dixon maybe.
Yeah, but what was it? I don't know what his stats were season long though.
His season long stats are pretty darn good. He's averaging like 17.
He'd be in
the 17,
he'd get second
a game.
Team. He's not going to get first team. He'll get second team.
No, yeah.
I think Kadari Richmond will probably get a looky.
Yeah, I don't know what his stats have been all year.
I just know when he's not in there, man, they're terrible. I'm trying to think anybody
for a
down.
While there, you could have made an argument for Joel Soriano.
I was going to say that.
Night.
Yeah, but yeah.
I don't think
who's
anymore.
What's the name of the guard from DePaul? I don't know what his stats are. That oh, I know Sparks from Georgetown. I think he should get in there. Seriously, he's
no.
Really good.
Two-win
so
team,
good. Huh?
The two-win team.
I know, but he's so good. God, wouldn't you love to see him on Creighton? Jeez.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kalk will be on the defensive team if they have. I don't even know if they do a five defensive team thing, but he'll be on there, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'd be hard to leave off. I mean, Joel Soriano averages 15 and almost 12 rebounds a game. I mean, that's pretty darn good.
I think Baylor's just gonna now to morph. Let's move to another. I mean, Shaka's coach of the year. That's easy. So I was just listening to John Bishop on the radio, and John took and said, you know, the beginning of the year, he said, you know, for Creighton to be really good this year, they've got to have a little bit of improvement from the core four, right?
Right.
Because we didn't know what we're going to get from Baylor and so forth. And he said, you know, most people would say, oh, they haven't, you know, they haven't done well, they haven't achieved. So he went and broke it all down. And now he broke those four down. He broke the team down. Amazing to me. Amazing to me. Like, they said Kaluma last, and he goes, yeah, this is a guy that's probably taken the most heat. Everybody says, oh, he's not there. I read off his stats. The only stat like he's down on this year is points in the shooting percentage in the paint.
Yeah.
His 3-point is 6 points higher than it was last year. Yeah, free throws way higher.
Yeah, he's scoring been much better.
Like two more points a game, getting one more rebound a game. And it was that way all across the board to all Creighton players. More, you know, Nembhard, more assists, more points, better 3-point shooting team. The Jays are a much better 3-point shooting team than they were last year. Increased it by 1 percentage point on overall shooting. Shooting free throws way better. You know, and you look at it and you're like, how did this team, you know? But it all came down to close games. Like we said, sprinkle 17 points over those four games around Thanksgiving. You got four more wins. And now instead of 18-11, you're 22-7. Now you're talking two-seed, you know?
Yeah, I think this year, when we go back and look to this, the Big East was – the conference was much harder this year, I thought, than last year. Villanova was – you know, Providence won the regular season last year without playing a full 20 games because of some of the COVID stuff. But, again, I don't even think that Providence team last year was as good as this one that they have this year is. And you really had – and Villanova ends up making the Final Four. You know, but outside of those two last year, who was really
– Yeah.
Really,
UConn was so inconsistent. UConn didn't have near the depth of pieces they have this year.
No. And so this year now you've got literally five teams, the top five teams that quite frankly, all of them at one point or another were ranked pretty darn high nationally, and have had their days in the sun. So it's I think it's been much more competitive with more teams at the top this year.
The other thing, too, is with Villanova, you know, that's where scheduling Creighton kind of tough luck. I mean, they had to play Villanova at the end when Villanova was getting good, you know?
Yeah.
These other teams played them early January where they were just a shell of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, we're playing DePaul. Maybe it was playing much better earlier in the year than they are now. So maybe that evens it out a little. I don't know. I don't think anything else in the schedule is. I always like getting that Providence game on the road done early, though. I hate having that game come later in the year. It just seems like they just get, they win always there, but they just seem even tougher
right
down the stretch, man. They just, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think there's any way Xavier would have to lose to Providence and then lose to Butler Saturday.
I don't see that happening.
It's kind of a rivalry, though, and Butler's been playing better. Butler's been playing better. Yeah, especially I'm very curious to see what Fremantle's playing.
Yeah, they would probably like to get him a couple under his belt before Big East tournament, but maybe not want to rush it either.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so here's the plan. So I already talked to you about the mock selection committee Thursday, Friday night, 6 o'clock. Join in Saturday at 9 a.m. Sunday at 10 a.m. Join in, see where everybody gets seated. Because it's a later game, because it's senior night, we're not going to have a instant reaction on Wednesday. We'll save it a regular season ending. Instant reaction Saturday night. It'll be a late night one. Well, it wouldn't be too bad. It'll be about 10 o'clock. We'll go on right after the game. And then next Monday, we'll have another edition of Blue Jay Banner where we get you ready for the Big East tournament. We'll go down all the matchups, every one of them. Ross is going to make you money.
Let's hope. We got to start with Florida Gulf Coast and Bellarmine tonight.
You are a sad individual, Ross. You really are.
You know, I've got Texas.
Oh, we got a big game. I mean, it's an absolute must win for Oklahoma State and West Virginia tonight. Two teams on. Oklahoma State's at home. They absolutely have to win that game against Baylor. They're done.
I think Oklahoma State is a byproduct of the reputation of the
Big
league
12
right now.
Yeah. Well, they're piggybacking. I mean, their strength of schedule is like six or something, and they really didn't play a great non-conference. It's just that
they haven't beaten. They beat the. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. They beat
Wichita in the non-conference. That's it.
Yeah. The one that's curious right now is West Virginia. Like, what if West Virginia goes 1-1 here? Their conference record is going to be something like 6-12.
West Virginia has no room for error. I mean, they've got 13 losses. I mean,
but they could be 6-12. The NCAA has never taken a team worse than 5-9 was the worst record ever.
Mm.
So that's another thing to kind of look at. Even though conference record isn't judged, they still kind of go, you know.
West Virginia's got a little bit of a better resume than Oklahoma State.
They won a couple more big games. Oklahoma State's won one.
Right. They smoked Pitt in the non-conference and beat an okay Florida team, beat an okay UAB team. But, I mean, gosh, Oklahoma State's resume looks really bad, I think.
How great is it going to be if Pitt wins the ACC and there'll be a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament?
God, you want to talk about a down league. I mean, the fact that this really matters, it doesn't. But the fact that ESPN's College Game Day is going to Duke, Carolina, maybe the worst records that those two teams have had playing each other on the final game of the year, like they do every year.
And my God, I mean,
that's got to be the worst two records those teams have had in 3 decades playing each other.
How can you not go to Arizona UCLA? I mean, how can you not go there? I mean, I know it'd be at like 5 a.m. when they'd be doing the show, but still, my God, that's the biggest game of the day. That's a huge game.
Yep.
Huge game. Now, UCLA's already clinched, but it's a huge seeding game. I mean, Arizona beats them twice. You might see Arizona be seeded above UCLA. Probably be on the same line, but, you know.
Anyway. Yep.
Thanks, Ross. Thank you, Zach. And then, by the way, so next Monday, join us, too, because we'll kind of lay out our – kind of get our postseason legs underneath us and our postseason plans, what we're going to do as we move forward here with the NCAA tournament. So – by the way, my bracket today dropped Creighton to 7, but the good news, they got to go to Des Moines.
That'd be great.
Guess who they'd meet in the second round?
Iowa State.
Baylor.
Oh, wow.
Just brings shivers down your spine, doesn't it? Not the same Baylor team, though. Not the same.
Not the same.
All right, guys. See ya.
See ya.